Hey everybody, welcome back to the week. I know it feels like, haven't we done 5 days? But I checked and no, we still have one more. So today's Friday, I'm John, this is Brett, how's it going?
Oh, it's going so well. This week on the Happy Half Hour, which you must needs watch, Kyle Howard and I talk about a lot of cool stuff, including whiskey pods that look like Tide Pods.
I saw on Colbert something about that. That's not a good call.
I think it is. I think it's a bad call for reasons of like just sheer volume. Like kids shouldn't be popping either of those in their mouth, but like the idea is like you realize just how dumb Tide Pods are, because even if you consume them, that's just way too much fluid to put in your mouth, even if it wasn't poisonous.
Don't put any Tide fluid in your mouth.
There's no Tide.
You have way too much of like a moderate approach to stopping kids from drinking laundry detergent. You're like, well, let's not go crazy and stopping them.
Listen, no, I'm sorry,
I'm a moderate. Don't drink any of it, okay? Unless you're really, really thirsty. Anyway, we've got a lot that we're gonna be talking about today. AOC has a new challenger. We have a little bit of sort of an intro video for the candidacy for this challenger. Let's see, some updates on Rudy Giuliani. I haven't gotten to talk about that much with you, Brett, so that should be a little bit of fun. Donald Trump had a rally, and I believe it's safe to say that I will be showing you maybe the single most disgusting Trump video I've ever seen in my life, so that should be fun as well. But before we get to that, we've got some good news and some bad news when it comes to yesterday's presidential forum on LGBTQ issues. So why don't we launch right into that? Yesterday's LGBTQ forum had some good moments, but it also had some fairly cringeworthy moments, both from some of the candidates and from the hosts as well. So let's start off there. We're gonna start with Joe Biden, who had a little bit of difficulty. This is coming from an author for Slate who said, to prove the depth of his own emotional concern for queer people, Biden decided to act like one. He flirted with multiple men, joked that he was about to come out as gay, and at one point clasped Anderson Cooper on the shoulder and mimed giving him a kiss. So some of that, yes, when you write it out like that, it sounds bad. Turns out it also looks bad. So we're gonna go to the video. Here is one of the instances that's mentioned in that little segment.
When I came out and I came, when I publicly stated,
well, that would be news if you.
I got something to tell you.
I kind of figured it out a while ago.
So look, admittedly, people laugh. Anderson Cooper played along with it.
Yes.
He laughed.
That was a moment that was like a weird way of putting things, which is Joe Biden's real wheelhouse. Just a weird way of putting things.
Yes.
And I think once you identify it as a weird way of putting things, then you can find out what motivates like the weird way of putting things. Is it just that he's saying the wrong words, or is it like a deep-seated weird understanding of like LGBTQ issues? I think on the spectrum of his understanding of LGBTQ issues, that of the moments from yesterday's climate thing was the least cringy. Just because like he was talking about, because the moment when he was like the first high-ranking politician to come out in favor of gay marriage. He came, he did that before Obama did. It was, and it kind of stole Obama's thunder on it. So, which, yeah, you then have to decide how much credit are you gonna give him for being like the least cowardly person when it comes to it, but still classified as someone who it took this long to support what is essentially something that just it should be a no-brainer. Given the word equality and what it would mean.
So look, my inclination is to be hard on Joe Biden because I don't support his candidacy, but I'm trying to be fair. The people in the audience laughed, and
Anderson Cooper super quick on his feet. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was funny. And look, if I just read this stuff and hadn't seen it, I would say that accidentally just saying the words when I came out and then realizing sort of what it sounds like and then making a joke about that seems to rest on the punchline being that if you wanted to, you can just switch over whenever you want.
You're wrong about that.
I'm wrong, and it's not on me anyway.
Joe Biden, period.
Okay, fine.
There's plenty of ways to be fair to Joe Biden and it come out bad for Joe Biden.
Okay, well that I would try to avoid making that joke because that is what I would worry I would be expressing. But again, it's not on me to evaluate that. So anyway, he did have some good comments that then turned into bad comments. So you take the good with the bad. So at one point, this is near the end, he said, it's normal, he said, of being queer in 2019. It's normalized. It's not anything strange. It's not strange. I'm sure all the LGBTQ people in the audience appreciate the affirmation. That's the author there, but the quote is good too. But then he goes on to say, remember Anderson back 15, 20 years ago when we talked about this in San Francisco, it was all about, well, gay bathhouses. It was all about round the clock sex. Come on, man. Gay couples are more likely to stay together longer than heterosexual couples. So I think I get what he's trying to say.
Yes, you do get
it. But that's not the best way to say it.
Correct. And this is the one where it really gets to his fundamental understanding of gay, of LGBTQ issues, specifically this being gay issues, and it still being trapped in a weird past.
Yes. That some politicians, because, that was their heyday, was that strange past.
Right. And I don't know, like essentially, I saw someone's criticism of that that really like opened my eyes as like, well, you're putting it still through the lens of you have to be like utterly monogamous in order to have a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's not like the way that one should understand the issues right now.
Yes.
He's still caught in like, oh, yes, there were gay bathhouses, but that's not all there were. And you know, man, that was wrong. But he's still looking at it through like a 1970s lens, just being able to say that it was wrong back then. You still don't know if he's really evolved on issues since then.
Yeah, I would say that that quote encapsulates what you should hope for from Joe Biden, which is he seems to be doing what he can on some issues to evolve, but he's held back by the fact that he's still very much out of touch and he was a politician for literally decades as people had horrible positions on these issues.
Right, he was the most in touch relative to like the Obamas, the Clintons, but still out of touch with people at large.
Yeah. So we have a lot that we got to get to. So really fast, it wasn't all on the candidates. So eventually Kamala Harris comes up and she's getting a little bit of criticism for this clip, which I sort of get a little bit, but much less criticism than Chris Cuomo, who decided to joke around and perhaps didn't nail it in the way that Anderson Cooper did. So Kamala Harris comes out to be introduced and this happens.
And my pronouns are she, her, and hers.
She, her, and her. Mine too.
All right.
Thoughts? So there, people are saying, okay, some people are saying.
Because I don't think he had any. He thought it was funny.
I know. And he thought it was funny. But that's the thing. Like,
that instinct.
It's not a joke. Or it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to. You're not obligated to make the joke.
It's a weird dynamic, right? Because Kamala Harris is being out front with it, you know, and just being like, hey, here are my pronouns. Also signaling to the audience that she understands that pronouns are a thing.
And are important to some people.
And it shouldn't be such like a stigma that you're afraid to bring it up.
Yes.
And then Cuomo, his instinct as being just Cuomo, like, hey, it's just me. And you know, I get things wrong along the way. Not too dissimilar from Biden in those respects. It's like, you know, if I'm wrong, I'll apologize, huh?
Yeah.
Like that's how he is. He's like
New Yorker. Yeah, I get it. Biden would have done that exact same thing.
Right,
by the way.
But the point of this whole town hall is like, that's not what we're here for.
Yeah.
We're not here to make that joke. And I get that it's at the beginning.
And here, by the way, I'm not a comedian. Brett, you're a comedian, so feel free to criticize. I will say what I think all of these jokes spring from is some politicians would stand on this stage and be really uncomfortable because they either dislike or fear this community. But I'm really comfortable with you guys because I don't hate you, so I'm super comfortable so I can joke around. And that leads to saying things that communicate stuff that they're not intending to communicate because they don't realize that while they are more comfortable and don't hate these people, they don't necessarily have as developed a position as sometimes they think that they do.
I definitely think
and that includes everybody, including myself.
But I think people are still uncomfortable. Like I think Cuomo's still uncomfortable with it. I think, and the reason that you make jokes is to,
I mean, politically comfortable, by the way.
Right, but
I think I have the right position on this issue. I'm not worried about being wrong, and so I am comfortable.
Right, but in doing so, disproving that you should be that comfortable and that you do have that understanding you think you have, right?
Yeah.
When you say the word comfort, similarly, he does feel comfortable making that joke, but he also feels I think a lot of people are still uncomfortable with saying the wrong pronoun. And there's different instincts people have with that. People who don't turn to humor typically just try to be extra reverent. People who do turn to humor, And in doing, and the point of humor is just to point out a truth.
Yeah.
And what he pointed out was what he thought was a truth, a true little moment for him, but it was false and it rang false. And that's why it was just really, really awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there were also, in terms of frustration on the part of the community that the forum is for how the community, how the forum is run, there was a protest by a group, I believe it was primarily trans women of color, who were frustrated with the questions that were being asked, the lack of representation in a number of different aspects. And one aspect of this that we're actually going to be talking about later on the main show is friend of the network, Ashley Mary Preston, had been previously scheduled to be at the forum and apparently was not being treated with a sufficient amount of respect. She tweeted, "I'm pulling out of the LGBTQ presidential town hall tonight. I was part of the program and CNN scrapped my participation last minute. I was going to bring attention to the terror TSA inflicts on trans and non-binary bodies while traveling. I'd rather be absent than present and silent." Because apparently they still wanted her to be there to show up on camera, but not actually have any time to talk about the issue that she cares about.
Yeah, there's a movie called In the Loop where they're referred to as room meat. And it's just like, we want to fill out the room with people so it looks a certain way. Yeah. And that is using someone. Ashley Marie will still be on, will be on TYT later, the main show later today, and we'll talk about that. Specifically, she wanted to bring up the TSA issues, which I, there was a pretty significant write up about it. I think it was, I don't want to say the wrong outlet, but it was just revelatory of exactly what you go through when you go through TSA, which is a federal program. Which is just indicative of, you know, just one of the many things that you face that isn't treated the right way.
Exactly. There were some good moments. We unfortunately are over on this. So we're going to have some overtime later on. That'll be at the close of the show. For now, we do have to take a break. We come back, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the climate crisis with an expert who will be joining us after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We're just a couple weeks out from the 2 weeks of climate protests that were led by a number of different awesome climate focused activist groups and obviously headlined, at least in New York, by Greta Thunberg. And the question now is, have we moved to a new place on this issue? Do we have the popular pressure to actually achieve something now? And joining us now to break it down and talk about this issue more broadly, a climate system scientist at the University of Ottawa, Paul Beckwith. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well and very glad to have you on the show today. First of all, I want to talk broadly about the crisis, but what is your reaction to the two massive international days of protests that we had not too long ago?
Well, I think there's definitely an ongoing climate emergency, and it's been largely unrecognized as an emergency, although there's lots of cities, there's lots of states, provinces, countries declaring a climate emergency without too much action yet. So the protest is the public voice. On September 20th, you know, an estimated 3 or 4 million people worldwide. And I think when the numbers are in, it's about 9 million on Friday, September 27th in the protests.
So in your work, you've talked about a tipping point of understanding on this issue. Do you think that we have reached that tipping point? And if so, where do you think the credit goes for that?
Well, I think it's a little bit too early to say whether we've reached that tipping point. You know, we're certainly heading in the right direction. And, you know, just over a year ago, Greta was pretty much unknown. And, you know, she started a whole movement and sort of is a catalyst, if you like, to get strong climate action. Certainly extreme weather events and the massive storms and flooding and droughts. I mean, there's severe risk of global food shortages soon, I think, from climate disruption.
So I think that we can both agree that we are in the middle of an emergency. There's been talk about declaring an emergency, making it a public thing where we all acknowledge what's going on. What do you think about that? Is there value to having the government or perhaps the UN declare a formal emergency on the climate?
Yes, I think that people, you know, the public is really starting to understand, at least more and more people in the public, that we're in a climate emergency. Governments are starting to, you know, make that type of talk using that type of language, climate emergency. But I don't see the action behind the words of the government yet, especially since many governments continue to subsidize fossil fuels. And, you know, they might put a carbon price on, but the subsidies to fossil fuels are much, much greater than any carbon price. So they're not serious. Until they scrap subsidies to fossil fuels, we know that they're not serious to address the climate emergency.
So one thing that I've tried to stress when talking about this issue is that there are lots of people who say that they don't believe in the science or whatever. They're classified as climate deniers. But it seems to be the case where politicians who are deniers are probably coming at it from a different point of view than a regular person who is a denier. There's sort of financial and campaign finance implications on the one hand. On the other hand, there's some psychological impediments to accepting what's going on or perhaps understanding it. What do you think about some of the psychology behind denial of this climate science?
Well, I think one of the issues with the psychology is it's a very, it's a very dire and negative thing that is happening. And, you know, people want to just sort of turn and look the other way or pass the problem to future, you know, down the line in time to future generations. But, you know, climate change is hitting us hard and fast around the world. It's having huge implications. You know, there's huge risks. It's accelerating. It's always going faster than expected. And I don't think, I think we've reached a point where, you know, it's hitting the pocketbook. It's costing billions upon billions of dollars, these floods of disruption. I mean, just look at the wildfires as a good example in California. I mean, massive, the Santa Ana winds, they knock over power poles, the power poles start fires. So what are they doing when there's high winds? They shut down the power to more than a million people, you know, starting Wednesday. They gave people a day notice, shut down the power, and some people won't get their power back till Tuesday, apparently. You know, meanwhile, you know, we're getting these massive superstorm hurricanes, that hardly move, whether it's going on the coast of Texas and not moving and, you know, dumping 5 feet of rain in some places or completely destroying the Bahamas. You know, the oceans are warming. Like the whole climate system has changed. The patterns of wind and ocean currents, everything has changed, and we have dire consequences from this now.
It certainly seems so. Let's turn to another aspect of the psychology, because we started by talking about Greta. Let's return to Greta. In terms of people's psychological reaction to things, what do you think about some of the reaction to Greta as an individual? I mean, there are many people who are sort of lifting her up, saying that she's an inspirational figure. There's talk about her potentially getting some sort of Nobel Prize, but there's also a lot of attacks coming her way. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, a lot of people feel threatened. They want to keep the status quo going. And, Greta's got a message. I mean, Greta's saying, don't listen to me, listen to the scientists. You know, people are listening to her and they're starting to listen to the scientists and they see, like they have no grounds. The people that are against Greta have have no leg to stand on. There's no science supporting their position. The science is supporting the position that we're in dire straits and we need to take strong action. And because people can't attack that message, they attack the young woman who gives that message. Especially, a lot of older people, set in their ways, and they just don't want anything to change, or they don't know what changes would. They see every change as negative, I think.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you said we're in dire straits. In terms of communicating about this issue, there does seem to be a rift. There's some people who say we need to make sure that people understand the nature of the threat, even if that means potentially scaring them, even if that means that some might, sort of retreat from the issue because it becomes too onerous, too scary. And others are saying we need to approach this in a way that we focus on the hope that we have, what we can practically do. What do you think about this? How much should we be focused on hope, concerns over, being labeled a doomer, those sorts of things?
Yeah. Humanity, needs to have hope. I think it's part of the human condition. So, I think a lot of the deniers, they ideologically, or there's something going on in their brain where, that's their mechanism to, ignoring the problem is their mechanism to deal with it, I think, at this stage. But in order to have hope, we need to have action. And, this is it's action. That's what Greta's calling for. We've had enough talk. I mean, the Conference of Parties, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change conference in Santiago, Chile, in a few months, it's COP25. That's one per year, 25 of them, and emissions are still going up. Mm-hmm. CO2 levels, all the signs, all the climate indicators are going up faster than expected, not in a linear fashion, in a highly nonlinear fashion. This is why we talk about tipping points and things. So I've said for a long, long time that we need to first declare a global climate emergency and then take strong action. I talk about a three-legged bar stool approach. Mm-hmm.
So I wish that we could go more into some of the specific actions you're pushing for. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us. And perhaps we can talk a little bit more in the future about some of the actionable items that you're encouraging.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we've got Trump's rally yesterday, including the continued demonization of refugee populations. We'll have that for you after this. At Donald Trump's rally last night, there was some truly disgusting rhetoric. And no, I don't mean this.
I love you, Peter. I love you too, Lisa. Lisa, I love you. Lisa. Lisa. Oh God, I love you, Lisa. And if she doesn't win, Lisa, we've got an insurance policy, Lisa. We'll get that son of a bitch out.
Okay, so let's be really clear. That was him talking about Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, and that was him being a government official and pretending to have an orgasm.
Wow, I didn't see it.
I'm not gonna do it because it was disgusting, but when he's breathlessly calling out the person's name.
I didn't see it that way. I didn't see it well. I didn't see it positively. I thought of it as a John Marcia. Oh, John Marcia.
Yeah, and what are they doing?
There's a lot sad about this rally, and
yes.
I don't want to focus on the president climax.
I don't so either.
Well,
and thankfully,
like
we went hundreds of years
it.
Without having to do that in this country.
No. George Washington wrote extensively about reaching orgasm.
I don't think that happened.
He had to take out his wooden teeth.
I knew you were gonna. There was no way you weren't gonna go to the teeth.
Yeah, why do you think they call it Mount Vernon?
Okay, this is on me because I played that clip, but I blame you too. Anyway, it gets disgusting in other ways, and that's when he goes into attacking Ilhan Omar, representative. So he goes to her home state to demonize her and the community that she comes from. I was going to play you the video of him attacking her.
But I'm just not going to do it. That's a really good decision because it's so bad.
It's so bad and it's so filled with lies and conspiracy. He name checks a blogger, conspiracy theorist blogger in the crowd who spread lies about Ilhan Omar and her marriage.
And that's the trick. It's identifying the trick, the move that he pulls, which is to distance it so far from the source material that now you're referencing false characterizations of the source material.
Yes.
So it's not too different from what we did show you, which was the Peter, like that at the beginning, it was spending 6 months saying Peter Strzok, there's a text messages and CIA conspiracy or whatever. And he did that for so long that now Peter Strzok just means conspiracy and people don't even remember how or why.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing with Ilhan Omar saying, she said this thing about a 9/11, a thing that happened, some people, some stuff. And everyone in that group is already whipped into such a frenzy that they're like, I know, I just want to believe it.
Well, actually, let's demonstrate that. So the video that I do want to show you is from when he's talking about her. It's not him talking. In fact, it's him not talking. But take a look at what the whole point of this is.
But when we say... say something about the United States.
So when I call it the 2-minute hate, that people go to these rallies to be part of a crowd that hates something, that's why he's like, yeah, come on.
There was someone in the crowd.
Just bring me the booing, come on.
There was a person in the crowd at that point who then later in the video they cut to being escorted out. That was that moment.
Yeah, exactly, but they love it. That's what they want to see.
And the actual video of her getting pulled out, as she's literally going, peace and love. That's what she said. She's saying peace and love over hate. Is my read on reading her lips.
Which you cannot get away with that in that group full of good Christians.
So weird.
So and also by the way, so you mentioned the Strzok thing. I feel the need to keep saying this. That multi-year effort to make you hear Peter Strzok and know, oh, it was the deep state with a conspiracy to stop him from becoming president. That's why I said we have a plan. We have a backup plan. They never have to respond to the follow-up question. So then, why didn't they stop you? If they had this plan, why did they do nothing? Why did they, in fact, go out of their way to make sure that James Comey didn't even reveal that you were being investigated? They actually did to Hillary the things you're saying they were going to do to you, but then didn't do. Say something about that. They don't have to.
He doesn't have to. He has his catchphrases. Mm-hmm. And that's all anyone wants. When you try to build a cult of personality, whether it's as a politician or as a YouTuber, you just come up, and there's this thing called, primal branding?
Yes.
Where you just come up with like catchphrases and little things. So whenever he's doing like a very pernicious version of like, hey, what up? You know, Bretters, like my, you know, what up, Bretters? My whole group is the Brett Troop. What up, the Brett Troop?
Yeah.
Because people in the audience will be like,
I want to be in the Brett Troop.
Yeah. And that's it. And it just signals that you're all together because you all have your own little call and response. And it's everywhere. And you look at it, I mean, the word amen, standing and sitting during church. Like some of these things are good because they build community and a shared experience, but others are just ways to insulate yourself from what's happening in the world and feel like it's okay because we're all like this at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And you want to be in a group of people who have the same exact identity that you do. Mm-hmm. And that's what they have there. And so in this particular case, the thing that's bad about it is that he gets, you know, this huge crowd of people, 98% of whom are white, to start chanting about how much they hate this congresswoman who dares to be black and Muslim. Mm-hmm. How dare she? And then also they go beyond that because it's not enough to hate her. They also have to hate the community. So he's very clear about what they should think about the Somali community.
For many years, leaders in Washington brought large numbers of refugees to your state from Somalia without considering the impact on schools and communities and taxpayers. I promise you that as president, I would give local communities a greater say in refugee policy and put in place enhanced vetting and responsible immigration controls. And I've done that. Since coming into office, I have reduced refugee resettlement by 85%.
That's anti-Semitic. Because like he's like, I don't like taking in refugees in the wake of major disasters and international problems. So you are against Jewish refugees in the World War II.
Which we know people were.
Which, yeah, and that's it. Were. I mean, that's exactly the thought. And I don't know, just do you fight it with other rhetoric? Like, we just go watch Black Hawk Down. That was in Somalia. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, just.
No, he goes, so he goes to a state known for its Somali formerly refugee community to get a big crowd of white people to chant about how they're horrible and they shouldn't be there. And we want to make sure that there's no more of them. That's what we definitely want. Even though we know what this rhetoric produces. And I want to give you one example of what it produces. This was news previously. Three right-wing militiamen from rural Kansas were found guilty on Wednesday in a 2016 plot to slaughter Muslim refugees living in an apartment complex in that state where they were having a rally. Jurors heard recording after recording of the men expressing a murderous hatred of Muslims who they called cockroaches. One of the men referred to himself online as the Orkin Man. And during the plotting, Stein, one of the militiamen who wanted to murder these Somali refugees, reportedly referred to then candidate Trump as the man. The men had planned their attack for after the 2016 election so as not to hurt Trump's chances of winning. Delaying the attack until then would avoid giving any ammunition to their political opponents, one of the terrorists said.
And Trump's victimizing these people. Like he's you've been had. And you need look no further than like the person who showed up with a gun at Pizzagate.
Yep.
And realize that that is not what's happening. And you just need to remember like the ridiculous things Trump says and Giuliani says when they have not borne out in the slightest. Mm-hmm. The only evidence we have is that the frenzy he has whipped right-winger extremists into has yielded deaths,
yeah,
has yielded murders, has yielded plots like this. Those are the ones plotting against a boogeyman.
Yeah.
He is, when he says deep state, he might as well be saying like Bloody Mary, like that thing that you went into your you know, bathroom and you're like, let's say it three times, nothing happens, but then we'll come out and say something did.
Yeah. 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 Except this time it potentially has murderous consequences.
Yeah.
Some of these plots are stopped, but others aren't. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, updates on Rudy Giuliani and the arrest of his associates yesterday after this. So much is going on with Rudy Giuliani and his associates recently that we can't do individual videos or segments on the show for every bit of news. So we're gonna do a quick Giuliani roundup of the news, a couple of interesting bits that have developed over the past day. So buckle up, Brett.
I am so excited about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, was exciting. It was gonna be an international adventure for Rudy Giuliani. He apparently reportedly planned to fly to Vienna, Austria, a day after his now arrested associates attempted to travel to the city. The Atlantic reported that it was unclear why Giuliani was traveling to Vienna. I'm assuming it's the sausages.
Yeah. Vienna sausage, as we all know, widely eaten in Vienna.
Just for context, yeah. His business associates who are now, have been arrested by the FBI, were arrested with one-way tickets to flee the country that they loved so much.
And if you haven't seen the mugshots of the guys who were arrested for this, Parnas and Fruman, mm-hmm. Just close your eyes and picture like a Grand Theft Auto 4 villain, auto-generated in bad CGI from like mm-hmm. seven different versions of eyes and seven different versions of mouths, and they just mix and match them. Like these guys are 2012 video game henchmen.
So you know it would be great if we had that visualization, but what if we had a video of them with Giuliani?
I would love to see
if
that.
If only we had that, which we do.
Just congratulated Rabbi Moshe as well. Hi, Moshe.
Moshe, how are you, baby?
How are you doing? Here with Rudy, congratulations on 120.
I love that picture. I can't wait to come back.
See you in Ukraine soon.
Yeah, and Anatevka is the best place in the world.
We love you.
We love you.
Fantastic.
What?
It's just a bunch of buds hanging out. That's all it is. Yeah. So
I never want to see Rudy Giuliani with his tie undone. Like that seems like he just got done doing something real personal.
Like one guy had the button down mobster thing. The other has the big mobster chain. And yet Giuliani comes off as the creepiest person in that video. And I love that even that's the only video I know of those three together. They managed to mention Ukraine in it.
Right. So these. So. The full context, I know you probably talked about on the show, is these guys were essentially going around the Republican apparatus, donating money to get stuff.
Illegally donating.
Illegally donating. Like they essentially laundered money through Russia to benefit their corrupt interests in Ukraine, using Rudy Giuliani and who was working for the president of the United States, which I think is corruption Yahtzee. Like that is
incredible.
That's like
or
we're done.
I don't know.
All of it. It sounds like a Mad Lib, but it's all true. So all the just like the one takeaway from two takeaways. One, what Trump did on the Ukraine call, which he has admitted to, and then further did with China is illegal. Mm-hmm. Never forget that. This is all around that. But secondly, like all the times when Trump and Giuliani talk about the deep state and all these people who are trying to pull them down, who are doing sketchy, corrupt things, Rudy Giuliani's going around with Nico Bellic's like best friends.
I don't remember
GTA
his name.
4, right? We looked it up in the control room yesterday. GTA 4, Nico Bellic. He's going with those cronies, paying the head of the Republican Rules Committee chair to get the ambassador to the Ukraine thrown off the case.
Yeah.
They're doing all the corrupt stuff they're accusing everyone else of doing.
Yeah.
And it's proven right there before your very eyes.
Yeah, and she's actually right as we're filming this, she is testifying.
Just one more little detail.
And we've got like four more updates.
One of those guys runs, they have two associates. All right, you got it. The name of the company?
Yes, I have it. Don't worry, but first, we did get an answer to two important questions that were raised yesterday on this show and on the main show. One was, who is paying Rudy Giuliani? Because nobody knows. Trump literally isn't paying him for his services, either personal legal services or de facto diplomat ambassador services. Well, we found out Lev Parnas, one of those individuals in the video, a Ukrainian-American businessman with a trail of debts and lawsuits, had known Mr. Giuliani casually for years through Republican political circles. Last year, their relationship deepened when a company he helped found retained Mr. Giuliani. Associates of Mr. Parnas said he told them he paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for what Mr. Giuliani said on Thursday was business and legal advice. So he was getting paid huge sums of money by those guys, or at least one of them, for something. And that is how he's been able to subsidize flying around the world to work for the White House and everything. So there's that. Mm-hmm. In terms of the businesses, that's where it gets fun again. So arrested Giuliani Ukraine associates operated companies called Fraud Guarantee and Mafia Rave.
This is real. This is the real name of the companies.
No, this is from Happy Half Hour. You made this up, didn't you?
Fraud Guarantee. Not we're going to fix you. We're going to save you from fraud, but Fraud Guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me?
Don't you want to go dance at Mafia Rave?
I hadn't seen Mafia Rave till now, but like, what is this? Like, I mean, this looks like it's like Aziz Ansari's character from Parks and Recreation.
I didn't watch that show.
Oh, well,
yeah, so I don't get that. Anyway, one other answer we had was a question that was raised to Donald Trump during, it might have been Chopper Talk. It was, do you know these two guys? And he started talking, rambling for 40 seconds about how there might be photos. He doesn't know. He takes photos of a lot of people, which wasn't the question. So that was fun. Turns out he does kind of know them, at least a little bit, because although he denied knowing them beyond a photo, we found out that he actually had dinner at the White House with both of those individuals. I don't know, maybe it was a drunken dinner, although he doesn't drink and he just forgot the details, but he apparently knows them to a greater degree than he was willing to admit earlier. There's some prior money donation stuff, but we don't even have time. It's a complicated story with a lot of disgusting details. That's the gist of it.
So just know that every ounce of corruption that Trump and Giuliani are trying to imply has been done by anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
We have a federal indictment, which is past where Mueller went. Mueller was investigating, maybe suggest some indictments of Trump, but he didn't indict any and didn't indict Trump. These are federal indictments. And when you read the actual indictment, I think the New York Times characterized it as like, these are just like hapless goons bumbling around, really trying to get stuff. Mm-hmm. And like these guys who have no problem laundering money, they still didn't find evidence of corruption of Joe Biden that mm-hmm. they could even wave around. Even like—
even though they give you the guarantee, it's in the name.
Giuliani's trying to like pawn off his proof of Biden corruption. It was written by a Ukrainian oligarch mm-hmm. who was like the problem.
Yeah.
So the corrupt person wrote the proof that Giuliani's trying to show around.
Well, he'd know. Okay, we do have to take another break though. When we come back, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has a new challenger. We're gonna introduce you to the challenger after this. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is already facing multiple primary challengers, and today she got a new one. It is City Council member Fernando Cabrera, and journalist Walker Bragman had previously found video of Cabrera. We're gonna show you a little bit of it, and it gives you something of an idea of where he's coming from.
Do you know it's harder being rich than being poor? I know you don't believe what I just said. But being rich, you got more responsibility. You have more things. When you work 9 to 5 and you're just maintaining, okay, I got my thing. When you are rich, you have more things to worry. Millionaire people, they have a lot of stuff to worry about, more stuff to manage, more stuff. It's really got there because of their ability to handle more pressure. Every CEO, every president that got in there and stayed there is because of their ability to handle pressure. They had increased their capacity. You know why your boss pays you what he pays you? Because of your capacity.
I just want to point out, mm-hmm. I can't believe someone surrounded with so much musical paraphernalia mm-hmm. spoke for that much time without referencing the song Mo Money, Mo Problems.
Okay, that's good. So that is not him speaking as city council member. In addition to being city council member, he's also a Pentecostal minister. So that is him ministering to a group there.
He didn't say Pentecost to be the boss.
I don't know that that's one of the expressions. Mm-hmm. I have not been a part of the community. But I can say that when that video was shared by Walter Bragman, who has previously done some investigative journalism in the city around this council member, the journalist was blocked on Twitter. But good job, Walker, for making that available. So a little bit more about Fernando Cabrera. I'm sure, you know, like a full platform is gonna come out at some point. But he responded to AOC opposing the gigantic subsidies that were to be offered to Amazon earlier this year by saying, why not have Amazon high schools to prepare our kids for jobs? Which I think is something out of a cyberpunk novel, actually. Corporations don't make our high schools, and I don't think they should. He personally opposes abortion and gay marriage, but says they are the law of the land and won't be burning issues in the primary. So he's one of those who doesn't like it, but won't supposedly go against it.
I want to go back to that Amazon high schools. I think what he's trying, one of these things, you just try to find the kernel of what he might be referencing. Mm-hmm. He's trying to maybe say that Amazon will end up giving us the resources to have Amazon-funded
perhaps
high schools. But what AOC's whole argument was is that we give them such tax breaks that it won't bring enough positive, so much in tax breaks that it won't bring enough positive tax dollar fallout that we could fund things like that.
Yeah,
not to mention, it will raise the cost of living in that area.
And drive people out. Yeah, so vote for the candidate that is going to raise property costs so that you can't live there anymore. That's one message, I guess.
Yeah.
The other would be, instead of giving the $3 billion to Amazon, build schools with it. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, you could choose to do that if you wanted to.
Well, it's not technically giving $300 million.
I understand. It's not the same exact thing.
That money doesn't exist.
Yes. Yes. I understand what you're saying. I don't want to have a 10-minute conversation about it. We could. We won't. Maybe we will.
We can
no,
later.
No, let's not. Anyway, we have a little bit more on how he's going to differentiate himself in terms of policy from AOC. He says he opposes Medicare for all and government-run healthcare. He instead prefers Vice President Joe Biden's plan. He also called AOC's Green New Deal a pie-in-the-sky plan that would boost taxes on the working class. So, as always, I will say, if you are enthusiastically against these plans, I give you credit for being honest about that. And that's the end of the credit I give you.
Yeah, there's I want to go back to the point where he's like, if you're poor, it's easier. It's not. It's easier to be rich.
It's harder.
Talk to rich people. It's much easier.
I think we should try both.
There's a lot of decisions that a CEO has to make. That is true. And people who run businesses, small businesses, it's very difficult to maintain all of that. It's hard because you have a lot of costs. However, it is impossible to say that you're being paid because of your ability. Well, it's easy to say, but people are getting paid because of an equilibrium that is being created by entire tax systems and economic models that where there is no better place to go to.
Yeah. Ask yourself this, if the CEO has the opportunity to pay you less, will he say, no, I can't do that, they're just worth more?
They will never say that.
No, they won't do that. Anyway, thank you for watching the show. Great to have you here to close out the week as always. Brett, everybody watch Happy Half Hour later today. It's gonna be a very exciting show. Moose Toilet returns, yes. That's always fun. And we'll see you on Monday morning. So we've shown you some of the cringier bad moments at the LGBTQ issues forum from last night, but there were some good moments, some funny moments as well. And so we turn now to Elizabeth Warren being asked a question, having a pretty good answer to it.
Let's say you're on the campaign trail and you're approached.
Been.
You have been, yes. And a supporter approaches you and says, Senator, I'm old fashioned and my faith teaches me that marriage is between one man and one woman. What is your response?
Well, I'm going to assume it's a guy who said that. And I'm going to say, then just marry one woman. I'm cool with that. Assuming you can find one.
Cuomo.
Oh, that's a fun moment. Come on.
Cuomo loved it. I mean, yeah, it was a fun moment. It played in the room. It went well. I feel like you could just say, I mean, I would think the better response would be like, I would tell them just marry one woman. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with that. The rest is like going at like, oh, it's a dude. Okay.
Uh-huh.
That's weird.
What, assuming it's a dude?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's necessary.
It's weird. It's not true. Like that's
hypothetical.
That's wildly underselling the vast number of people of all genders who are bad. But also, like the way he characterized it was like, hey, someone comes up and says something, which that guy asking the question was characterizing as the best. Like giving every benefit of every doubt to someone who would say that.
To that hypothetical
man. And she took the benefit of the doubt in terms of bridging the gap in messaging away from that, which that guy was really just setting up for
her
to do.
You're right, I hate her now. I hate her.
You do? I don't hate her. I think it was a really great joke in that room. Like in that comedy club of the LGBTQ whatever. Like that was a good joke. Mm-hmm. However, like she went ham on it. She went further than probably was the safest and giving benefits of doubts to people. If that's her approach, then that's it. And there's a lot of arguments that the progressive should be stronger and more over the top. But you are playing by like Trumpian type rules.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I'm just saying it's good.
I liked it. That was a Trumpian comment. I really don't think that it was.
I'm not saying that either. But I'm just saying like. That is a Trump era response because it is saying that like, well, men are worse than women in this situation, and
more self-interested potentially.
But like, there's a bunch, I've seen a bunch of clips of women saying like marriage is between some women one man
believe,
and one
yes,
woman.
Yes, certainly some women, even a lot of women, millions of women believe that. I think that if she's approached by someone, there is at least a 1% greater chance that it's a man than a woman. But that's not the part that I'm focusing on here. It's her saying that I am not going to turn my entire campaign into doing whatever I can, hiding my opinions, contorting the way I message, to reach a hand out to someone who, even if they like my response, is never going to choose me over the Republican.
I agree with that.
And I just want that for
once. I'm not saying any of that is false. I'm saying you got what you wanted.
And that's all that's important.
No, I'm just saying that you got what you wanted. And it's fine. It's just like she was super like mean to a certain subsect of religious
person.
Okay,
she's mean.
And I think the people that are turned off by that, I very much agree, are turned off by Elizabeth Warren, just the words
or
together on a sign. Or any Democrat. Like,
yes.
I'm just saying that.
And
but if you want my analysis of the moment, that's my analysis of the moment.
I never said or implied I wanted your analysis. So, yes, she has been criticized saying, oh, you can just write off these certain states or whatever.
And I think it's better to be this way than to be like, well, I think that we all come from different backgrounds and we all have religion. Don't ask, don't tell. Like, this is 1,000,000,000% better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, look, I'm not saying that this is the perfect example of this thing, but considering how many incel terrorists there have been, maybe being a little bit more aggressive towards guys who are radicalized based on their inability to find a partner is something we should take seriously.
I'm not looking to appease incel terrorists.
You're pandering to incels every day. Okay, so let's move on. I'm kidding. Let's move on. That wasn't the only other good moment. So Pete Buttigieg, he released early in the day, as we'll get into, a new policy plan. He had some good responses. So I just want to give you a little bit of information about him as well. He had a touching moment where he spoke at length about his reaction to realizing he was gay as a young child and choosing to live in the closet well into adulthood. He explained that he'd been deployed to Afghanistan having never fallen in love and could have died without having had that experience, which that's moving.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously not just something that's true of him. Like, any number of Americans are worried that before they feel like they can be themselves, they might never actually experience that. And considering the violence that the community faces, that's a very real fear.
Yeah, I mean, that is one very effective way to communicate that all the people, you know, about whose experience this LGBTQ plus town hall is meant to like present to the world, like, they're real people with real experiences. And when he puts it in terms of like, I had never fallen in love, that's something I think everyone can really identify with and how much of a tragedy it is. And then brings in things that like service to one's country, that it's like, how can you be mad at this guy for serving his country? It's real. And he, those two things together, I thought was very effective.
Yeah. Earlier in the day, as I implied, he released his LGBTQ policy plan, promising support for passage of the Equality Act, a ban on conversion therapy, and the balancing of religious liberty with LGBTQ rights. That last bit isn't necessarily what some of the people in the audience wanted to hear. But not bad, and great synergy in terms of doing it right before the forum. Especially in what we were just talking about, in terms of like communicating in a way that I think maybe does a better job of reaching out a hand to say, hey, you don't necessarily, you know, talk to people like me or realize it, but we have real experiences. Maybe you can understand it if I put it in the context of my military service. Yes, that's a good ambassadorial sort of thing to do.
What do you mean by a good ambassador?
In trying to get people to understand something that they've been incredibly resistant to understanding.
Real quick, to go back to Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, geez.
And also the way the guy asked that question, I have never seen anyone just ask that say that thing that way. I've never actually seen video of someone say, hi, with all due respect, what if my faith says that I should just be able to marry one man or one woman. Mm-hmm. No one has ever said that. And I think Elizabeth Warren was referencing the person we're more familiar with asking something in the arena of that question.
Possibly.
Know for a fact because I looked into my heart.
Okay. I'm just worried I'm gonna get yelled at any second now. Anyway, that's all the time we have. We're gonna have more on this on the main show later on. But thank you everybody for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.